You may be seated. Our next case is 10-211, State of Ohio, ex rel. Jamie Baker versus Coast to Coast Manpower and the Industrial Commission. You will note that Justice Lanzinger has recused from this case, and in her place we have Judge Matt McFarlane, Appellate District 4, who is graciously agreed to substitute for this particular case. So we're grateful for that.
Thank you, Chief.
And we will now proceed with Mr. Bowman. Oh, excuse me. You're not first. I'm sorry. Ms. Erdman, you're first.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the Court and Counsel, I'll be taking 6 minutes. My co-counsel will be taking 6 minutes, and the appellants will reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The Industrial Commission urges this Court to adopt the position that an injured worker who loses his natural lens as a result of trauma and subsequent surgical repair to the eye has suffered a loss of eyesight under Revised Code 4123.57B. Not only is this position consistent with the case law and statute, but it would also provide a bright-line rule finding a scheduled loss, providing an equitable result that treats this injured worker similarly to other injured workers under the statute who have limb losses and limb loss of function.
Counsel, what is the practical difference between the natural lens and the artificial lens if the vision is, I hesitate to use a term here that might, you know, trigger something, but the vision is pretty close to what it was before?
This Court has held in Kroger and its progeny that any kind of vision enhancement or improvement from a surgical correction is a corrective measure rather than a restorative. So in the case with a natural lens, you can filter and focus light far superiorly to the artificial lens because it doesn't filter light or focus in the same way. There are other risks associated with it that would make it inferior to the original lens. As this Court has, again, found in Kroger and its progeny, those vision enhancements, although they may improve vision through the corrective procedure, they never eliminate the loss of the natural tissue that serves as a functional loss and would entitle Mr. Baker to a scheduled loss award.
I've been trying to think of how this case projects onto other matters that might be analogous. Let's say you have somebody that breaks their leg. Leg's totally unusable in the broken form. And to get the leg use back, you have to put metal rods in that create the structure of the bone, and the leg is now usable. You have some consequences in terms of pain or other issues, but the leg is now usable. Is that leg then, under this theory, also declared a total loss?
No. And actually, this Court addressed that similar issue in Kroger, finding that a broken bone that can heal, it's not only that is it a temporary loss, it's not a permanent loss.
I'm talking about just healing. But I'm talking about you have to use something artificial like the metal struts or metal rods to make that healing possible, which is similar to having a cataract. To make the lens implant has to be there to make seeing possible, not just the mending of the bone itself. That's more analogous when you have to put something artificial in the body to create that healing. Does that create a total loss?
No, it doesn't. Because under 4123.57, It's a permanent partial disability statute. It's divided into two parts, Part A, Part B. We're dealing with Part B, which is a permanent and total loss of either function or a loss through amputation. So in the situation that you're posing, they might be entitled to an award for a permanent partial disability percentage award of impairment. However, there is no permanent loss because of an amputation requiring a prosthetic, nor is there a total loss of function that would be permanent.
Is there a difference between the loss of an eye and the loss of sight?
By virtue of the fact that you would lose the eye, you would not be able to see. The statute speaks to loss of eyesight, which is a function. It's a little bit different from the other provisions under Part B, which speak to a loss of a body part. However, the statute's been interpreted to include loss of function of the body part as well. And so it doesn't matter that the statute doesn't delineate an award for a loss of a cornea or a loss of a lens, because the statute speaks to eyesight as a functioning body part. And so if you lose your lens or your cornea, you are not going to be able to see out of the eye.
Well,
but that can be corrected, can't it?
The vision can be corrected.
Sometimes to high resolution.
Yes. But again, that correction cannot be considered in making a schedule loss award according to this court's directive in Kroger and its progeny.
Should there be an exception then to Kroger for a situation like this, which might be different from an amputation or a prosthetic?
No, there should not be an exception, because similarly to the claimants in Kroger, General Electric, AutoZone, and Parsec, this injured worker lost his natural functional tissue as part of a course of the corrective procedure. And so all of those claimants were also entitled to schedule loss awards under the statute, and so should Mr. Baker be.
But this claimant wouldn't be in the same or similar situation with corrected vision as, say, an amputee.
Well, if the medical technology has advanced to the point where this court considers a prosthetic lens or a corneal transplant to be as good as the natural functional tissue, then that's something for this court to reconsider and reapply the principles of Kroger.
Say that again.
Sure. What I'm saying is, as last year, this court decided Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries v. Thomas, still reaffirming the principle that the natural lens and the natural cornea are superior to the prosthetic device or the corneal transplant. If this court finds that the medical science has advanced to the point where those are no longer corrective but rather restorative procedures, then it's up to this court to reapply the principles of Kroger.
What standards would we use to go from corrective to restorative?
I think it depends on what the medical technology would be, and I don't think we're there yet. There's nothing in the record to be able to support that.
Was there anything in the record about the case that you mentioned from last year?
Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries?
Or we reaffirmed that the medical technology had not advanced.
In terms of whether we briefed it or?
Well, there was any evidence in the record, and you probably wouldn't know that, I guess, from the opinion. And there's no evidence in the record in this case. And, you know, one only has to think about all of the individuals who have cataracts and have cataract surgery. It's an inpatient thing. It's very, very common these days, which in 1987, when Kroger was, may not have been so common. And would not, and because this situation has not been presented to us, I guess, for a while in such stark contrast, it's either completely one way over here or one way over here. Would this not be a good case for the court to remand back to the commission for determination of what the state of the medical art is in this regard?
I don't think so, because I think the court can rely on its decision last year in Lazy Boy, still finding that these procedures are not restorative.
But that was based upon the Kroger decision in 1987.
True.
And we've not had any evaluation of the advance in medical technology since then.
Well, I think what we're left with today is an injured worker who has lost his natural tissue as a result of the corrective procedure. And it's before this court, and I'd ask the court to make a decision on the merits of what's here. And I see my time is up, so thank you very much.
Mr. Bowman.
Madam Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the Court. In the Court of Appeals decision in AutoZone, a point of significant historical import was made. 4123.57 replaced a predecessor statute in the old General Code. The General Code statute required determination of loss of vision after correction as the standard for a scheduled loss award under the Workers' Compensation Act. 4123.57 changed that. The statute now says that the standard is the loss of uncorrected vision. The Court of Appeals erred in this case in holding that the proper time for determining that loss is after the trauma but before the surgery.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. For me, there's a threshold issue as to the writ of mandamus.
Your Honor, I'm having some trouble hearing you.
I'm sorry. For me, there's a threshold issue as it relates to the writ of mandamus and the standard that this court has to apply to overturn or to get where you want us to be. And that standard is an abuse of discretion. And in this case, and co-counsel has cited the Kroger's case, and at that case we said, where the record contains some evidence to support the commission's finding that there have been no abuse and the mandamus will not lie. In this case, didn't Dr. Tam make a finding that there was only a partial 8% loss? And how do we get to finding an abuse of discretion with that evidence in the record?
Well, Your Honor, I think it has to do with applying the appropriate legal standard. What we are suggesting in our proposition of law, what the Court of Appeals said in Parsec and what the Court of Appeals said in AutoZone, is that the loss of the natural lens causes a total loss of the uncorrected vision of the affected eye. If that is the case, then you do not reach the question of what percentage was it, what was his visual acuity when he entered the operating room before the lens was removed. And I think that's the correct standard, because anatomically, the function of a lens is to focus the light which enters the eye. If there is no lens, as the Court of Appeals said in AutoZone, at paragraph 15 of its decision, it would appear obvious that without a lens to focus the light entering the eye, there is no real vision. I would liken it to what would happen if I took the lens off my single-lens reflex camera and tripped the shutter. The digital sensor will record areas of light and dark, maybe some colors, maybe some shapes. But without a lens, none of that information is in focus. I will not have produced a photograph recognizable as a depiction of any object in the physical world.
That's only really
without a lens in the eye, light hits the retina, but it's not focused and it's not recognizable as to form.
But after surgery, there is a lens in the eye. It's not the natural lens, but it's a lens that acts in place of the natural lens so the individual can really see. So isn't your analysis just part of the way there? And I understand what Kroger said about the state of the medical arts in 1987. Have we progressed beyond that?
But, Your Honor, the same question was before this court in General Electric in 2004. It was before this court in AutoZone more recently. And it was before this court less than 1 year ago in the Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries case, when the court once again cited with approval Kroger and all of its progeny, holding that an artificial implant is a correction, not a restoration of vision. And the court noted in various ones of those decisions that there are specific reasons for that. An artificial lens does not have the ability that the natural lens has to continuously readjust focus at various distances.
Do we know that's still the case now, some years hence from 1987, which all these other cases rely on, that statement in 1987?
Again, Your Honor, I don't know that I agree with the characterization that all relies on 1987. General Electric very specifically was, have we now reached the point that we should call this a restoration rather than a correction? And this court said no.
What's the medical evidence in this case? What's the evidence in this case about whether an artificial lens, what the qualities compared to the natural lens?
I don't know that the medical evidence in this case, honestly, directly speaks to that point. Reliance was placed on the prior holdings of this court and the Court of Appeals for the proposition that the loss of a lens constitutes the loss of uncorrected vision of the eye.
Justice Kupp asked of your co-counsel the question of, should we remand this for a determination of the advancement that has been made in the medical procedures and the consequences or outcomes of lens replacement?
My answer, Your Honor, would be a little bit different. It seems to me that a determination of that nature involves quintessentially legislative fact-finding. If the legislature wishes to conduct hearings and determine whether the state of the medical art has now advanced to such a degree that a prosthetic lens is equal to or better than that which nature provided, the legislature has that option. I don't know that that should be decided on a case-by-case basis.
Well, no, I'm not asking for a case-by-case basis, and I don't think that's what was referred to. We were, you know, in general, this procedure that has been developed for corneal replacement and lens implantation, you know, we're a long way from 1987, and should that be reviewed?
Well, all I can say is that each time this court has reviewed it, up to and including less than 12 months ago, the court has continued to adhere to the holding that the result
like
of an
medicine,
implant
this
is
court evolves.
Correction.
I also have one more question for you. When they're determining the vision loss, if someone is visually impaired before the accident, is that taken into consideration with the determination, or do they start with a loss from 100% visual acuity?
There's actually a suggestion, and it's not really discussed in this brief because I don't believe I felt it was germane to the specific issue in this case. There is a decision called Swander from about 1983 that essentially held that where someone had a significant degree of visual impairment prior to suffering an eye trauma, he was nevertheless entitled to a total loss award because he lost 100% of the vision which he had prior to the trauma.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Bowman, before you leave, we still need your expertise here, and so we value what you're providing to us. But is the loss of a lens as a part of an eye, in your view, similar to the loss of an eyeball or a substantial impairment to a retina?
Well, I appreciate the question, Your Honor, and I think the answer to me lies in the statute. It's significant, I submit, that the statute doesn't award compensation for the loss of an eye. It awards compensation for the loss of sight. The eye is a complicated structure. Sight can be lost due to the loss of a lens, due to the loss of a retina, due to trauma or inflammation or infection of the optic nerve, due to an injury to that portion of the brain which perceives the sensory information transmitted by the eye and the optic nerve. The issue is not what physical structure was lost. The issue is, did you lose the function? And since the statute speaks to loss of uncorrected vision, the issue is further narrowed to, did you lose the natural function provided by the natural tissue, which at the time of that surgery was permanently removed and will never function again?
Counsel, I'd like to ask you about, I think, one of the arguments that you raised, and I don't think you got a chance to elaborate on it, and that was that the error in the Court of Appeals was because they looked at the loss of vision before the surgery, and which was about 8%, as I recall, 8% impairment.
Simply, Your Honor, my view of that is...
I have a specific question,
okay. And
my specific question is, is the medical evidence in the record indicate the probability of a further deterioration if the surgery had not been performed? So what informed the judgment of the Industrial Commission and the Court of Appeals as to what the likelihood was of a continued deterioration in the eye and loss of vision?
The medical evidence indicated that Mr. Baker had developed a traumatic cataract. Left untreated, a cataract will eventually produce a total opacity. In this case, the surgery was done before that opacity had become total. But it's also important that the Industrial Commission's, the staff hearing officer's decision was based specifically on the Court of Appeals holding in Parsec and this court's holding in AutoZone, which had both of which involved determinations, at least by the Court of Appeals, that the loss of the lens constitutes a total loss of uncorrected vision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Proxmire.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, my name is Mick Proxmire, and I represent Coast to Coast Manpower in this matter. Despite the arguments that have been raised thus far, I will seize upon Justice McFarland's question as to whether the threshold has been met for the writ of mandamus. Certainly has not been met. There have been no arguments to indicate, one, that a duty was required of the Industrial Commission to issue an order other than they had. Secondly, no argument has been raised to indicate that there's been an abuse of discretion in that there was no evidence or there was not some evidence to support their order. In fact, the evidence relied upon was that of Dr. Tam. Dr. Tam clearly stated that there had only been an 8% loss of visual acuity. Dr. Tam's opinion was supported by the injured worker's own physician, Dr. Hendershot, who had indicated that there had only been a 20/50 loss of vision. This gentleman did not lose his lens as a result of the injury. He merely lost 8% of his visual acuity.
What is the evidence about the likelihood that he would have lost his lens over a period of time as a result of the injury?
Well, I take issue with counsel's characterization of the medical evidence. That evidence is not evidence that is in this case. The only evidence is that of Dr. Hendershot, the examining treating physician, who says this gentleman has a 20/50 loss of visual acuity. Then 3 months later, Dr. Hendershot again says the vision has actually improved and it is now 20/30. The doctor suggested or recommended that as a course of treatment, a lens implant could be undertaken. It was an elective procedure. It was not required, and it was not mandated. The claimant,
and there is no evidence in the record that it would have been required at any reasonable time in the future?
To my knowledge, Your Honor, no, there is not.
Let's take a hypothetical that if this was the type of traumatic cataract that would progress, does that change anything? Does that change the need for the lens implant? Does that require the worker to wait until he or she has 80% loss and then get the lens implant to get recovery for the total eye? Or how does play out if that evidence is there?
So yes, Your Honor, I believe it does. It requires the claimant and the medical examiners, injured worker, I'm sorry, and the medical examiners to address the medical as it is presented to them on each injured worker's basis. If this gentleman had sustained a cataract that was so severe that the lens and vision was going to continue to decrease, thus making the surgery necessary. At the point prior to surgery, whenever that surgery was undertaken, the visual acuity can be assessed. Once it is assessed, 412357B then comes into play. Is there a 25% threshold? Has it been met? If it has been met, the claimant, the injured worker, is then entitled to pursuit of the loss of vision based upon the percentage greater than the 25% that has been lost to elicit an award under that criteria. And in fact, that somewhat goes in line with the facts in the Parsec and AutoZone cases. Again, I take issue with the arguments of those facts and the particular holdings. In Parsec and AutoZone both, the natural lens was already lost during the injury. In Parsec, Mr. Agin sustained an interocular penetration, and the corneal laceration was such that he was already leaking the aqueous fluid. The lens had become so opaque that they couldn't even visualize the retina underneath. Surgery was undertaken immediately.
Counsel, steering away from your descriptions there of the injuries, you're not interested then in whether medical science has advanced to the point where the implantation of a lens would be restorative
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
You're not. Okay.
That would go to the determination after the fact of whether there has been a loss or not. If this court is going to address the corrective versus restorative nature, then we don't need the statutory 25% analysis that's already been set forth. That only goes to whether or not after the surgery, the vision has been improved such that we now fall back below the 25% threshold, and thus the injured worker is no longer entitled to an award at all. So I'm not concerned with that analysis as to the medical corrective versus restorative. That's not the issue here at all. The issue is, did the injury specifically cause a loss of vision greater than 25%, not the surgery? Counsel wants to argue that once this claimant goes under anesthesia and no longer perceives what is going on, that the moment the scalpel touches the lens, they have a total loss of sight. Well, that's not the case. They have not perceived any loss at all. They're under anesthesia. By the same token, the analogy has been made that this is equivalent to an amputation and an attachment of a prosthetic. That analogy would only hold true if we were dealing with the removal of the eye itself and the insertion of a prosthetic eye. Certainly, you have lost entire vision. You have a prosthetic eye. But the true analogy here is that the lens was injured. The sight was not lost until, as counsel argues, the scalpel essentially entered the lens. The analogy is to an injured worker who would have a knee replacement or a hip replacement. The natural body part, being the bone and the joint, were removed. They then implanted the artificial hip joint or knee joint, and the claimant is then, quote, made whole. However, you are not entitled to a loss of use award for the loss of that limb due to the insertion of the artificial device, as you would if you had the leg entirely amputated. In this case, the eye was not entirely removed, only a portion, and a portion of that eye was replaced with a artificial lens. Therefore, the analogy is not the same as counsel has briefed and argued here.
But I thought I heard you say originally that this was elective surgery, and that's the reason, or one of the reasons, why this is not compensable.
It's not compensable because prior to the surgery itself, this injured worker did not meet the threshold established under 41-2357B, meeting a 25% loss. No medical record ever states that prior to the surgery or as a result of his injury, he lost any more than 8% total.
Or that he needed the corneal or the lens replacement.
The medical evidence only suggested the need for the surgery as an option to treatment as a corrective measure.
So it wasn't truly elective. I mean, the doctors in the record, they found that that his condition was going to continue to worsen, and that the reason for the worsening cataract was as a result of the injury, and they recommended replacement of the lens from a medical perspective, not simply as an elective procedure.
I don't believe that the medical evidence actually does show that the doctor stated that this cataract would continue to deteriorate. In fact, the doctor himself merely stated that as a course of treatment, surgery could be undertaken. It was not immediately undertaken. It wasn't even immediately requested.
So, well, it wasn't immediately undertaken because they thought what they had done initially was going to work. It was only when the condition deteriorated that they went forward with the removal of the lens. Isn't that correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It was not immediately undertaken at the time the doctor placed in his records that surgical intervention is an option. That doctor referenced that as far back as, if I believe, in January of 2008, he did not even make the request for the surgery itself until mid to late February of 2008. And at no time, to my understanding of the facts, did he ever say this was a necessary and required surgery. It was merely an option for additional treatment.
But the commission indicated that the medical evidence in the record established the work-related injury caused a traumatic cataract to occur in the eye, no dispute that in order to treat him, the opaque lens had to be removed, artificial lens implanted.
That decision by the hearing officer was certainly under his review and discretion.
And in AutoZone, we said that the contention, the commission can conclude the loss of the natural lens due to an injury produces a total loss of uncorrected vision. So aren't we really faced with the issue of the uncorrected vision?
Yes, we are. We're faced with the issue of the
uncorrected vision. I thought you said before that that's an issue we don't reach here.
In AutoZone and Parsec, both injured workers lost their lenses immediately. They had no vision. Their uncorrected vision was essentially zero. They had a total loss. They were certainly entitled to the awards and the holdings of this court. In the case before you now, Mr. Baker sustained the injury, required one suture, and only had an 8% loss of his uncorrected vision. That is the determination. His 8% uncorrected loss does not rise to the threshold in
the code. So you're saying this case is factually distinguishable from AutoZone and the other cases where
very much
uncorrected
so.
Vision of total loss occurred as a result of the immediate impact of the injury?
Very much so. Both AutoZone and Parsec, it was essentially an immediate loss. The lens was essentially obliterated. Mr. Baker, in our case, sustained a small puncture which required one suture to initially close. He was able to see up to, at worst, 20/50, at best, 20/30.
So that's why you don't think this needs to be remanded for any consideration of technical developments. You're comfortable with where the statute is at the moment
Certainly.
And ready to have the case decided in connection with the 25% threshold established.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. The statute itself, the administrative code is very clear as to the threshold. The directive in Kroger and General Electric is very clear. What counsel has asked you to do and is specifically stated is create a broader rule and add another level of loss to the code section.
Mr. Proxmire, that's what I want to ask you about. In their brief, and I quote, they're saying, primarily, a broader rule provides equity and clarity. And on the equity side, if you put yourself in the injured worker's position, wouldn't it be more helpful to focus on the causation and what potentially could happen to this worker? Because I think there's a distinct difference between a knee replacement, someone who has a knee that is replaced as opposed to an eye, just because the organ, they're so drastically different. So isn't there some equitable argument on behalf of the employee?
Well, first, to respectfully disagree about the difference between a knee replacement and an eye replacement. If you entirely remove the eye and replace it with a prosthetic, that would arise to the loss already. You already lost the 100%. When you are removing only a portion of the eye, such as the lens or the cornea, and implanting a artificial lens, you are doing the exact same procedure when you replace a knee. You're taking out the actual joint. You're taking out the actual bone and putting in an artificial joint and bone to make it function as it did previously. And in this case, putting in the lens makes the eye function as it did previously. In fact, after the lens was implanted, Mr. Baker had a 5% change in visual acuity better.
It improved. Yeah.
To make the contention that the moment the injured worker goes underneath the scalpel, he is now automatically entitled to 100% loss is inequitable, because you will have injured workers who are not surgical candidates. And if they're not surgical candidates and they have not risen to the level of 25% under the code, they then are barred from recovery, as Mr. Baker and counsel would have you grant that he would be entitled the minute he underwent the scalpel.
And can this court get to the place where Mr. Baker and the commission wants us to go without invading the province of the General Assembly? In other words, the statute is written.
No, you cannot.
Even with a limited remand, can we get there?
No, you cannot. I see my time is supposed to be concluded. I'll end there and ask that the appellate court's decision be affirmed and that the writ of mandamus be denied.
Thank you. The appellants have used all of their time. I'll give 30 seconds to whomever would like to proceed.
Thank you for that accommodation. I would respectfully direct the court's attention to paragraph 19 of its AutoZone decision, where it specifically noted that the distinction of parsec that was attempted there was the argument that the claimant at AutoZone had not sustained a total opacity of his lens prior to surgery. What this comes down to is whether you disregard loss of vision, loss of uncorrected vision resulting from surgery. Since we've been talking analogies, let me suggest this. If somebody sustains a crush injury to the leg, but the leg is not amputated at the time of trauma, it later becomes infected, it is amputated to save the injured worker's life, and he is then able to walk with the aid of a prosthesis. Is there anyone who would suggest that he had not sustained the loss by amputation of that limb,
except,
and that he was not entitled to compensation for it?
Counsel, that's in the statute. Can you help us on the argument that your opposing counsel raised? How do we get around the less than 25% vision loss at the time of the injury?
Your Honor, I think it comes back to what the Court of Appeals said in Parsec and in AutoZone, as Justice O'Donnell quoted, that the Commission can conclude that the loss of the natural lens results in a total loss of uncorrected vision. If that is the case, then the analysis never reaches the question of what is the percentage of visual loss. If there is no lens, there is no ability to focus. When you undergo surgery as a direct and proximate result of a compensable injury, that surgery having been authorized in the claim, and you suffer the permanent loss of that structure in the eye, which makes it possible for the eye to focus and render the sensory information entering the eye comprehensible, you've suffered a permanent loss of useful, meaningful vision in that eye.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman.
Thank you.